Lowe's knows how to get you ready for holiday hosting with up to 35% off select home decor. And get up to 35% off select major appliances. Plus, members get free delivery, haulaway, basic installation, parts, and a 2-year Lowe's protection plan when you spend $2,500 or more on select LG major appliances. Valid through 10-1. Member offer excludes Massachusetts, Maryland, Wisconsin, New Jersey, and Florida. Installed by independent contractors. Exclusions apply. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Welcome to Money Talk with Skyler Fleming, where we go beyond the dollars and cents. Let's get talking. Welcome, Money Buddies, to this week's episode of Money Talk. I'm your host, Skyler Fleming. Today, we're going to be talking a lot beyond the dollars and cents. You hear me on nearly every episode say how money is more than just math. If it was just math, we would have it all calculated. It would be very easy. So what is that extra part beyond the math? Well, that's just what we're diving into today. Have you ever wondered why you can't seem to kick a financial habit that you don't really want to do? Do you feel like you spend money out of control and generally feel like you don't have any control with your money? There's a lot to do with our mindset and some of the psychology behind our money that has to do with that. Today's Money Buddy is here to help me break down some of that for you into an easy to digest conversation. I'm excited for this interview today, and I know you're going to enjoy it. Today's Money Buddy is Scott Yamamura. Scott Yamamura is an expert in communication and design with over 25 years of experience and numerous awards. As a certified financial coach, he uses his expertise in forming creative, effective messaging to cut through the noise of a financial world to deliver a practical understanding of money to individuals through a financial epiphany. And I'm excited to talk with Scott today. This is a great conversation, and I know you're going to enjoy it. But the money talking points for this week are, what do you see everyone else doing that you want to stop? 2, what crisis are you trying to avoid? And 3, what can you start visualizing to help your finances? With those money talking points in mind, let's get talking. Welcome, Money Buddies, to today's interview on Money Talk with Skyler Fleming. Joining me today, I have Scott Yamamura, and we're talking about the mindset behind overspending and maybe some other bad habits that we're trying to break. Scott, could you introduce yourself for everyone before we get into this?
Hey, everybody. Scott Yamamura here, author of Financial Epiphany. I've been in the communications industry for 25 years, working on clarifying messages. When I came across the financial industry and all the overwhelming messages there, it caused me to pause and to jump right in, not only to learn finances for myself, but to help clarify the messages for everybody else so we can all get out there and succeed with our money.
Yeah, if there's one thing the financial space is full of, it's jargon and complicated messaging. So I'm glad you came into it with your background so you can help simplify it for people. But let's kick it off here today. I want to talk about how people can get in control of their mindset. One of the ideas that you mentioned is overspending is more than just bad habits. Let's start off with what other things are at play when people are looking into overspending.
Yeah, absolutely. My thought is on overspending that if we don't have a plan, we're going to go with the flow. We're going to go with the bandwagon. We're going to go with what the culture is doing. So what is our American culture doing? We're big spenders. Our economy is successful. Absolutely. We should be proud of that. But it's successful because we work jobs making goods and services, and then we sell them to each other. It's this interesting cycle that takes some self-control in order to not overspend. When we look around at what everybody else is doing, that it is exactly what we're doing is we're overspending. We cannot see what's in each other's bank accounts, which many times is closer to zero than we'd like. Yeah. We're all out there buying similar things, similar phones, similar cars, similar homes, similar electronics, similar possessions. These things are normal to us. They're what our culture teaches us we should be doing. We want to be in proximity to our colleagues and be doing what our colleagues are doing. When we're all there together, we may not notice that we're actually sitting together on the edge of a cliff, feeling really comfortable together. All we know from the recent past is that when they're sitting on the edge of a cliff, a pandemic, some sort of disruption, something global can cause the edge of that cliff to crumble. We want to be not close to that cliff if we can help it. So hopefully during today's session, we'll talk about ways to back off of that. Not only but run towards financial health, financial success, and a financial peace in our future.
Yeah. And the picture I got there is a much more complicated and complex, maybe Halloween, where everyone's buying candy just to give each other candy. Instead, you could just go buy your own candy. Like you're story about how we're all making goods to sell them to each other instead of maybe enjoying the life that we want to live. We're all saying, hey, here's my job. Buy this from me. I'll go buy this from you. And we're all slowly pushing each other towards that cliff. So that's kind of a way that I thought about looking at it right there.
Yeah. No, I love that. The Halloween story.
Yeah. Same thing goes with Christmas. Let's all give each other $20 gift cards instead of just keeping our
$20. That's absolutely it too. Yeah. Yeah. Because that holiday is absolutely turned into consumer.
Trading money.
Yeah. we in America are very good at turning things into consumer opportunities.
Yes. Yeah. We're professional consumers. I love that. Why can it be so hard to change our financial habits? Someone saying, I know I overspend. I want to get out of that cycle or get off of that cliff. Why can it be so hard to do that?
Yeah, it's the default. To put it another way, there's a study in the past called the Ash Conformity Experiment. Several actors, and then someone was injected into this experiment. They didn't know everybody else was an actor. They all chose the wrong answer, the obvious wrong answer. And so the person in the experiment goes right along with them, choosing the wrong answer as well, even though the right answer is painfully right. We do go with the flow. So some numbers behind that flow is that you might be familiar with different numbers out there. 78% of the public might be going paycheck to paycheck and 77% in debt, around $100,000 on average. Mm. So that's normal to us. When that's what everybody else is doing, we go right along with it. But I think we can start to open our eyes to that and see that some of these things aren't normal. We're starting to hear things that really are not normal, like the student loan crisis, the retirement crisis, the housing crisis. I think we're normalizing crises because they're happening every...
That's the cliff, though. That's that cliff you were referring to, these bubbles that are going to pop.
Yep, that's right. And so we all act like it's normal. We all do it together. But then at some point, I call it the day of reckoning. It usually comes in what's called a correction in the market. It's where things just are headed and they cannot be sustainable forever. So it's going to stop and go back where it needs to. And our spending needs to do the same. Mm. Just because everybody else is doing it doesn't mean that we should too. We have a responsibility to ourselves to find out and to get financially literate. It's really interesting that we spend so many years, 18 or so, going to school or higher education. And we're learning all these wonderful things, but not always is personal finance part of that. Mm-hmm. We owe it to ourselves and our families to keep learning because, boy, if we're working a 40-year career, if we're saving for up to 30 years of retirement, that's about 70 years or so that we need to be ready to fund. We owe it to ourselves and our families to learn about finances, to find out what is the world doing, and that's different from what we need to be doing. We need to take up our responsibility and learn and change our habits and live that out. So hopefully today's session helps with that.
Yeah. And I think the thing that you just said there is it's so hard to change those habits because you see everybody else doing it. You see everybody else living the lifestyle that comes from being paycheck to paycheck, which means buying whatever you want, whenever you want, because sure, you might have a good income. And if you do, that just means you're spending even more money. So it's getting out of that flow of things that you're talking about. And that's a bit about how you can back off of that cliff is to begin to say, what is everyone else doing? That might not actually be the right way. Like paycheck to paycheck, for example, your stat. I used that stat recently in a presentation I gave at my local library, that same 78% of people live paycheck to paycheck. And when I tell people that, realize that you're not the problem. Like this is a majority thing. You can correct it though. Like don't feel so bad for yourself because this is a majority situation that everyone finds themselves in. How can people find the motivation that now that they're starting to realize, wow, most people live this way. I don't want to be like that. Where does that motivation begin to come from?
Right. And so having finished my book recently, Financial Epiphany, it's all about motivation. It's all about confidence. When I grew up, my mom used to say, talking about money is like talking about your underwear.
It's a private topic.
We don't want to be out there boasting about her, and that's what she was talking about.
Or our underwear.
But if we're not talking about money and how to steward it, then it's something that's gonna, by midlife or later, it's gonna confront us. Hey, why haven't you been figuring me out? You want to retire one day, right? Are you gonna help with your parents? They're getting elderly. Are you gonna help with their needs and their costs? Or your children are going to college one day? What have you been doing to save? There's an approach that if we learn how to be positive with our money, then all the other things are going to fix themselves. So another way of saying that is a big enough why can overcome any how. Now, a lot of us hear, oh, don't do this with your money. Don't spend this. Don't do that. And certainly a lot of those are true. Mm-hmm. You know, don't roll over a balance with your credit card month to month. Don't go into debt on certain things if it's not necessary, even things as big as a car. Don't go house poor by buying too much house. So there's all these don'ts out there. But when we hear a bunch of don'ts, we kind of reel back. Humans don't like to hear too many don'ts. I believe when we learn what our ability is, and I like to call it an ability, when we learn what our ability is to multiply money, meaning investing is multiply money, when we learn that ability, I like to frame it like that, then it takes care of all the other things we got to do, all the other traps we need to avoid. I like to think of multiplying money like athletic ability. And, you know, when someone is talented at a sport, you know, football and baseball and soccer and basketball, all these other things, there's a lot of sacrifices they're willing to make to play that sport. They may know or be coached to hear, hey, these years of your life, these are valuable years. You may not have this physical ability in a few years like you do now. You are in your prime. And if you apply yourself to the sport at this time, it is the most critical, potent time ever. And the same goes for investing, is that typically when a lot of us are launched into our early careers, right out of college or higher education or into our working years, we're spending. We're thinking about maybe we got into college debt. Maybe we're thinking about our relationship and getting married one day. Maybe
new cars, new phones, all that sort of stuff.
We want to show that, hey, we got a job now. We're successful. Look at this. I'm normal. You know, yes, I'm succeeding. And that's a huge temptation at that time. That
that's
also
your prime, like you were going to say. That's your prime to invest.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's, oh, I need to be going and doing these things. Why would I go do this thing where money is invisible, multiplying? I need to do these things that are visible to others. And that critical time of when we start our career, it is the most potent time of when our money multiplies. I like to mention the age 22, because that's when most people will get out of college and start their careers. That is the most critical age. So like a coach, I like to step up in people's lives and say, hey, you need to know that this is your most critical, potent time to invest. And when people say later in life that they wish they had gone back and changed things and saved more, they're talking about this time. What I teach is to really coach people to utilize that time and to go invest with gusto and sacrifice. Yes, you're going to be moving money from elsewhere, but while you have that multiplying power, that's the time to act.
Yeah, there's so much potential and opportunity there. I love what you said. Like when people are saying, I wish I would have started sooner, they're talking about right now. If you're just getting out of college, they're talking about that moment. So take advantage of it. And thankfully, I got into money at a very early age, so I was able to apply some of those things. And it feels like a cheat code when you're actually able to do it and listen to those people trying to give you that advice to start early. I want to go back to one thing about investing real quick that I want to share. You can ramp it up and you can always scale it back. I love the idea of push yourself with that sacrifice element that you mentioned. Push yourself to see how much can I contribute, because you can always reduce that your next paycheck if it really is unnecessarily tight and you can't afford your needs. So I recommend people like try pushing yourself. I think that's a good way to maybe just stretch yourself, see what you can actually do with that sacrifice.
Yeah, stick your toes in the water, see what it feels like.
Jump in completely if you want to and try it all.
and get yourself out of the pool the next month if you don't like it, or adjust and adapt. Not doing something, and time can pass really quickly, and years of your best multiplying years can pass you by. I recommend getting in, testing things out with everyday normal things, 401k, IRA, brokerage account, things like the S&P 500 index fund, target date mutual funds. Just get in, do the normal stuff that we know is working for the masses. You could change your mind later, but at least you started with your most powerful years with this tool that we all hear and know we should be using.
Yeah. Recently, I just figured out that my work's 401k, half of the balance in it is company match and growth. So that means essentially I've put in half of this money that is now mine through time with compounding and the great benefit that is the employer match. So that's an even further effort for people to say, just start a little bit earlier, because you get so many more opportunities when you have these accounts. But I want to go back to one thing that you said here, And that is shifting your mindset to a positive approach with money. I had a recent guest on that talked about, instead of saying, oh, I don't live paycheck to paycheck, that's still hanging on to that paycheck to paycheck piece, which is kind of negative. You can begin to talk to yourself in ways that say, oh, I'm glad that I have a healthy emergency fund, or I'm glad that I have a good surplus that I don't have to stress about each paycheck. What do you think the benefits are of giving yourself positive reinforcement when it comes to talking about your money?
I call it the silver bullet approach, because I think thinking positively and having one simple goal is enough. Mm-hmm. It's enough to set all the other pieces in place. And I do think it's hard to do. I don't think that's the message that we typically get. We think we have to only give up things. Oh, I have to give up my coffee drinking. Oh, I have to give up a vacation. Oh, I cannot go out and eat. But once again, like an athlete, if we are like, hey, there's this goal down there, I want you to go score, we're willing to sacrifice and overcome some of mm-hmm. these things in order to do that.
And so yeah, you find the goal.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thinking positive. And just to break that thinking positive down a little bit, one of the common sayings we hear is save early. But that's not enough on its own. We don't know what to do, where to do, or how much to do it. There is also take advantage of compound interest. Great advice. But once again,
what does it mean?
not quantifiable. What do I do? Mm-hmm. What do I do after that? I believe it. I mean, it makes sense. I mm-hmm. trust the person that just told me that. And then there's things like the words that get attributed to Einstein, mm-hmm. that compound interest is the eighth wonder of the world. Some will believe that Einstein said that, some not. But anyway, that's a popular saying attributed to him. At any rate, if Einstein is saying the growth and multiplying of your money via these investment tools is the eighth wonder of the world, shouldn't we be doing it? Mm-hmm. Most people are timidly going about it, even though there's so much great advice. So what I like to do is break it down and throw some numbers to it. So I look at the ages mm-hmm. 22, like we had mentioned before, right? When you get out of college, 32, 42, 52, 62. So mm-hmm. every decade of your age with a two after it. And 62 is a common age to actually retire at. So here we go. That span of time is 40 years, which is also the most common duration of a career. Also, a really common rate of return over a whole career is 7.2%. For some, that's more conservative, but it's something that seems very attainable and normal. So mm-hmm. when you have those three things, you start a career at 22 and retire at 62 over a 40-year career, and you're earning this 7.2% interest rate, the money that you put in, say you put in $1,000 when you're 22, it's going to double every mm-hmm. 10 years. That's just the math behind it. So if you put in $1,000 and do nothing else, it's going to double to $2,000, $4,000, $8,000. And by the time you retire at 62, it's $16,000. So what I like to do, because thinking about accumulating money or building money, some people have been raised not to be comfortable with that. It's a taboo subject to accumulate money and save for retirement even. And so I like to flip that around and say, it's not about putting in $1,000 and gaining $16,000 later. It's about you have the power of 16. When you start working, you have that power of 16. Remember this ability, right? Mm-hmm. We're talking about it like sports. You have this ability, and we're quantifying it. You have the power of 16, the ability to multiply money by 16 times. In the next 10 years, when you're 32, it reduces to the power of 8. That's what's happening. And then the next 10 years, when you're 42, it's the power of 4. And then at 52, the power of 2. So this multiplying power is actually halving. And when we understand and put a framework on what's happening, we're not just saying save early, compound interest, it's great. We're actually saying you have the power of 16 when you're 22, and it's going to half every 10 years until it's gone. When it's gone at 62, you're statistically retired and spending down your money, and it's going to slowly decrease for most of us, our net worth, as we're spending it down. Mm-hmm. But when we put a framework like that, now we've got something that we can do some simple math with. Now we don't need a calculator or a financial advisor around every turn. We're empowered mm-hmm. to understand what's happening. I like to put it that way and apply them to those ages that I had mentioned.
Yeah, that's fantastic, because that's going to help people begin to visualize, oh, I'm only putting $100 into my 401k each paycheck. No, that's $1,600 over that 40-year time period you were talking about. Now, mm-hmm. multiply that times your 26 paychecks each year over those 40 years. You can see this number get big quickly. Yeah. So that's the fun of compound interest. It gets so big so quickly because it's growing on itself. I love that. And that combined with being positive about your money, finding that goal and motivating yourself with some positive reinforcement to get to that goal, that can be a huge win for so many people. I also want to talk a little bit about, you just talked about visualizing your investment return over time to help people find the motivation to invest, but how can visualizing maybe things like your expenses or visualizing your credit card expenses and which categories you're going to, how can that help with people's mindsets as well so they begin to see where their money's actually going?
Yeah, so money can be like floating around in space with no gravity and no up and down and nowhere to stand on. And we got to plant our feet down on something. And so getting the data together, our own data together, is part of that. We do need to figure out what our net worth is. We do need to figure out what our expenses are. Some people are going to be able to budget and stick to it every month. Others not. But you do need to at least find out where you're at. I do recommend getting a spreadsheet out and laying out all your expenses, looking at your credit card statements, bank account, and receipts, and laying that out at least once so you can see what's really happening. Yeah. When my wife and I first did that, we found out we were spending too much on food. And I mean, eating out.
That's always the category that comes up for most Americans. That's such an easy place to spend so much money.
That's the one. And then when we first figured out our net worth, it was an interesting number to figure out. And even then, we need to figure out what net worth really is. It's your assets minus your liabilities. Like I said, finances can be like floating out in space. So you got to figure out your own numbers. The reason why I say do it at least once, because it's a hard habit for a lot of people to stick to, although I do recommend it. You want to know where you're at. But it also tells you what's going to happen later. And the way that I teach, it's always about what's your input, what's your output. So we talked about $100 and now is $1,600 later. But what if you got to the point of saving, say you're in your 30s or so, and you were fortunate enough to save $50,000? Well, all of a sudden, you can say, okay, $50,000 in my 30s. So then by the time I'm 40, it's going to double. So 50 will turn into 100. 100 will turn into 200. 200 will turn into $400,000 by the time I retire. Wow. Now we know what is in my 401k and what it's going to do. And we need to understand that input and output because it empowers us. It's confident. Mm-hmm. We're not relying on someone else to tell us what's happening. We should take ownership and learn enough about finances that we can participate in it. It's something that we're going to do in one way or another for at least, you know, up to 70 years if we last long enough, you know, meaning after or we longer. Get out of our house. not a dependent anymore up until, you know, age 90 something. But yeah, we got to take responsibility for ourselves and learn these things because we're going to spend a lot of years doing it. When the day of reckoning comes, and for some of us, it's when we retire, we want to look back and have said, all right, I'm rather comfortable and pleased with what we've been doing. I'm not shocked and thinking, can I do this all over again?
Yeah. And the visualization piece helps people realize, like you just said, you were spending more than you thought you were, especially on food. That's the same thing with my story. In high school, I was telling my friends, guys, I spend so much money eating out. I'm sure you guys do as well, because we all had similar expenses. So I tell them this and they say, we should cut back on that. So you can use your data to empower your friends to make better decisions and help you do better with your money. For another example, someone I was coaching recently began to put their budget together for the first time. The app they were using had fun little bubbles that would fill in as they spent money. They texted me a week into the month and said, my friends asked me to go out, and I told them I couldn't because I didn't want my bubble to fill up that fast. That's the power of visualization, is being able to see things like that. And also with net worth, when you begin to actually see your net worth and put that number down on a piece of paper, this magic starts working in the back of your mind to say, how can I improve that number? Because when you don't realize what it actually is, you just keep spinning in circles, being like, oh, I wish we could pay off debt, but you're not actually worried about it because you don't see the impact of paying off debt. So I love that piece about visualization. I think that's super helpful for people's mindset.
And I like what you said about, I like to call it doing money in community when there's someone else, that you can keep each other accountable. Going this alone is hard. Mm-hmm. If you find a like-minded friend or family member that's saying, yeah, it's about time that we get this figured out, go in it together, find resources together. Yep. You're not alone. You're telling this person, here's a book I read. This person saying, here's a workshop I want to go to. Do you want to go together? And it's doing money in community. And I highly recommend that. Once again, money doesn't have to be a quiet, private thing. So let's go ahead and do money together and get healthy together. Because otherwise, the marketing messages are the prevailing messages we're getting on a daily basis. $400 billion are spent annually. That's over $1,000 per person, including the babies. We're the most marketed to population on the planet. Even the aliens are looking down on us, scratching their heads. But we got to do something about this because we're making goods and services and selling them to each other.
Yeah, and you can begin to back off of that cliff together. I love to call my community the money buddies. So go out and find your money buddy that you can go to those workshops with. Go to your local library presentations that someone's talking about budgeting. Go to all those sorts of different things together and work on your money together. And it becomes a whole lot easier to do it because you have someone who you can send a message to saying, hey, I'm feeling like I want to spend extra. Can you help talk me down off that cliff and back me away from it so that I'm not continually diving my finances over the edge? I love the idea of using community. Is there any other actionable tips that you love to give people? I know you do coaching and you just wrote your book as well. Is there any other tips that you think we can't leave out by the end of this episode that you'd love to share with and coach people on?
Okay, so if you haven't started your 401k or IRA or brokerage account, I recommend jumping in. There are discount brokerage firms like Charles Schwab, Fidelity, and Vanguard, which a lot of people start out with if their employer isn't providing something. And if they do, talk to your HR. If you already have something going, I recommend log in. You forgot your password? It's worth it to just get in there.
Get into the account.
Yeah. Password, get in there. Find out what your rate of return is. I like 7.2% over the duration of a career. It can be more aggressive and higher earlier when we're younger and can take more risk and get bigger returns. That typically is a little smaller when we get closer to retirement and can't stomach the ups and downs of the market as much.
Yeah.
But I know what your rate of return is. Is it around 7.2%? That means your money, what you're putting in, is doubling every 10 years. And there's going to be your company match potentially too, if it's a 401k, things like that. But get an idea. Maybe my rate of return is lower than I'd like it to be. Maybe we want to look at our stocks and bond mix and ask about some advice to mix that around. Maybe we're getting amazing returns. The stock market did really incredible the last couple of years. And so if you were participating in that and getting those, your rate of return might be a big number and above average. Good for you if you've got that. Yeah. You know, big smile across your face might not always be that way. We're going to see what happens in these years down the road. But that's another thing to do is find out your rate of return on what you do have invested if you started an account. And then lastly, I like to recommend that people figure out what is their multiplying power. So once again, I'll lay that out for you. There's all the numbers in between, but if you're 22 and you're multiplying money at a regular rate, you're multiplying power is 16. If you're 32, your multiplying power is 8. If you're 42, your multiplying power is 4. 52, your multiplying power is 2. And then if we're following statistically what others do, we're retiring around age 62.
Yeah, I love that because a rule of thumb gets people pointed in the right direction and then they can begin to ask questions to either you or I or any other financial guru or podcaster or other. Then you can begin to get more specific advice from people and get more fine-tuned direction. Rule of thumbs are great to get people moving in the right direction. So I love that. That's fantastic. Scott, this has been a great conversation. We've talked about all sorts of things from underwear to cliffs and money somewhere in there as well. But
yeah, that's right.
You recently released a book. So I got two final questions for you. Where can people find you and your book? And then one final question would be, what's one thing you wish you knew about your money mindset that you wish you would have learned sooner?
Sure. Financialepiphany.com is the URL to find out more about the book and the things that I teach about multiplying money, helping people find their ability to do so. So that's the place to go online. As far as my money mindset and learning something sooner, if I could go back and tell my 22-year-old self, it would absolutely be what my multiplying power was. I was acting timidly. I would tell myself, and who are we? We're going to trust ourselves the most. If we could go back in time and tell our younger self something, we would absolutely give ourselves great advice. When we were younger, we would absolutely trust our future selves the most. Yeah. So I would go back and say, hey, you do have this multiplying power of 16. You're 22. You're timidly going about things. You're just learning to start. You're starting to learn about a 401k. Just go all in. Go all in.
Dive into the deep end.
Yeah, with my multiplying power being just a fraction of what it was, I have to work a lot harder now to do what my younger self could have done a lot easier. I would have told my previous self, hey, in the future, I want to relax. Can you do some of this work and sacrifice now? Mm-hmm. Once again, you are an athlete. You have an ability, this superpower that diminishes with time. I want to tell you, you have that. You don't know you have that. I want to tell you and coach you to take advantage of it. Because when we have that understanding and confidence and motivation, we can do the thing. Otherwise, we don't jump in to the deep end when there's something that we don't understand. But when we realize that, we can go full force on it. That's what I would tell my younger self.
That's fantastic. Get some good basic financial literacy in place and understand your money, and then begin to push for those big goals, and you won't regret it. Like, starting when you're 22, if everyone did that, America would be a completely different place, because we wouldn't be trying to catch up so much. I think what you're telling there about people trying to get started right out of school is a great place to put yourself in. So, Scott, thank you so much for joining. This has been a fantastic conversation.
Thanks, Skylar, for having me on.
Thank you so much to Scott for coming on today's episode. That interview is fantastic, and I'm sure you enjoyed it. I know I did as well, but let's get into the money talking points today. The first one is, what do you see everyone else doing that you want to stop? Well, the thing that this was for me was buying a new iPhone every year. It's so tempting, and albeit it's a whole lot less tempting now because upgrades are a whole lot less appealing or exciting, but my wife, while we were dating, was able to convince me that it's not necessary, and I'm still rocking an iPhone 11 Pro. Thankfully, I realized this, and it saved me thousands of dollars over the year. And think about the multiplier that Scott talked about, with those thousands of dollars each turning into 16K over 40 years. That's a lot of money when you think about cutting a habit or cutting back on spending every single year for a new iPhone. So what's something you want to stop doing that everyone else is doing? What do you see out there? Well, there's some common things like spending on the latest tech, buying every single streaming service because there's so many of them and you feel like you have to have them all at once in case there's some random thing that you want to watch, even though you really only use one at a time, buying a new car or buying cars at all instead of looking at other transportation methods. Another thing is buying a house when maybe they're not needed at all or they're super expensive and you're forcing yourself into a house. These are all common things that everyone is doing that you can probably avoid, especially the car one. I love to challenge people on what would biking to work look like? What would a bus route look like? Just look into those things, because not buying a car can save you so much money. It's such a drain on everybody's wealth. The second money talking point is, what crisis are you trying to avoid? Well, I'm trying to avoid the current housing crisis. My wife and I don't need a house right now, plain and simple, so we don't worry about buying one. So many people are stressed about interest rates, and I'm able to avoid all that stress by having a plan in place where we're able to rent, and we don't have to worry so much because we're not in a place that we're ready to buy. So we're avoiding that crisis of having to worry about it constantly, or potentially the crisis of having a payment bigger than we can afford. Inflation has also hit us, but not as hard as others, because my wife and I know where our money is going. We know where we can cut back. We can begin to see those increasing prices quickly reflected in our budget, and we know what areas we can cut back on in order to save some money there. I'm also trying to avoid the crisis of owning a vehicle. This is a huge crisis that plagues everybody. It's so expensive and they're such a drag on our lives, whereas owning a bike is totally possible and it's freeing and it's much more fun. And vehicles are so much more expensive, and no car salesman wants you to consider insurance and ownership costs. So make sure you remember what else you're spending on with a vehicle. It's insane the amount of money people are willing to sink into a mode of transportation when there are cheaper alternatives out there just for the sake of having a car. I consider it a crisis, and I think it's something that we should look at avoiding so that we can save more money. This goes to the same point that Scott was saying about marketing being such a pervasive factor in our lives. It's so present because all they want is to give us money. They're not actually considering the rest of our needs or rest of our concerns or questions. Just give them the money and the marketers will be happy. So what crisis are you trying to avoid? Well, make sure you're avoiding the crisis of not having enough for retirement. No marketing is going to tell us to make sure to invest in our 401k and then buy their product. So make sure you have enough. Save for retirement. Make sure you're using your 401k. Make sure you're using your IRAs. Make sure you avoid the crisis of not having enough money in retirement. But let's move on here to the last money talking point. What can you start visualizing to help your finances? First two couple things are expenses and net worth. These are two great and easy things to start tracking. They're very easy. A tool that I recommend using is Empower Personal Dashboard. It can do both for free. Let's start by talking a little bit about expenses. Well, when you're recording your expenses, you'll begin to see where you can cut back, and you'll recognize very quickly where you'd like to spend. It's very likely going to be eating out, because that's the place where most Americans spend a lot of their money. You'll recognize very quickly what expenses you don't enjoy spending on, and you'll find yourself wondering why you spend so much in that one area. And then once you realize that, you can quickly cut back. Let's also talk a little bit about net worth. This one is super powerful to begin tracking, because you begin to have your mindset fall into a naturally good path of wanting to increase your net worth. When you're tracking your net worth, you'll begin to see a true value of what paying down debt looks like. You'll begin to see how it actually helps your financial situation. And there's going to be a magic force that begins to work in your mind in favor of your net worth. It's going to make it a whole lot easier to turn down those impulse purchases because they're not good for your net worth. Now, they're not a huge problem when you have your financial foundation in order and your spending in order. Who cares about grabbing a candy bar? But grabbing them like crazy, putting them on credit card debt, and not realizing how it impacts your net worth, that is a much bigger deal. But when you begin to track your net worth, it's going to be a powerful way to gamify your savings so that you can see your net worth number grow month over month. So start by tracking both of these over the last month. Go over one previous month whenever you're listening to this. Go over the last month and track every single expense and track your net worth. You'll begin to see how much those expenses add up. You'll begin to see categories you can easily cut back on. And track your net worth monthly if you would like to, but quarterly at least, and no less than annually. You want to see it change over time. So I like to do it monthly because I like to see it change monthly, but if I had to recommend to someone to do it that didn't want to spend a whole lot of time doing it, I would suggest quarterly. That does it for the Money Talking Points and for today's episode. Thank you to Scott for coming on this episode. And to wrap it all up, make sure to consider talking about money more. I do know that we don't need to talk about our underwear like we suggested in the episode, but money, absolutely. We really talked about a wide array of things today. We started with overspending and how there's more at play than just bad habits and how much of our culture is influencing that spend, spend, spend mentality. Be careful not to sit right on the edge of that cliff with everybody else. If everyone else is complaining about some aspect of their finances, that may be a good sign to step back, learn about that area, and get it under control. Remember the multiplying power of compound interest, that you may be able to see your money 16x over a normal 40-year career. A 7.2 rate of return is conservative, in my opinion, so you may even be able to see more than that. Scott was referencing something called the Rule of 72, which takes your rate of return and divides it by 72 to figure out how many years it will take for your money to double. I recommend looking it up if you want to learn more about that and compound interest, but don't forget to do it with a money buddy so that you can both learn and start talking about it together and do better with your finances together. If you're looking for a money buddy, I'd be happy to chat at moneytalkwithskylarfleming.com/chat. But that does it for today's episode. The best way to stay up to date and connected with all things Money Talk is to subscribe to the podcast and sign up for my email list. Head over to moneytalkwithskylarfleming.com and submit your name and email right there on the homepage. You can also use my contact page on the website to send me any questions. And if you're looking to get started with budgeting, I've partnered with My Budget Coach, a platform that connects you directly to a financial coach. I'd love to work with you over there and help you with budgeting. My link is in the show notes. Remember, the best way to learn from today's episode is to go and have a money talk about today's topic with a fellow money buddy. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Money Talk. I'm your host, Skylar Fleming. Have a great week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Skylar Fleming. This show is provided for informational and entertainment purposes and may not be specific to your unique situation. Please be sure to do additional research before making any financial decisions.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's,